On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Republican-controlled legislature sent Governor Evers a nearly $88 billion two-year spending plan last week. It would cut taxes by more than $3 billion. Here's Assembly Speaker Robin Voss defending the tax cuts before the proposals advance through the legislature's budget writing committee.
Republicans, especially over the course of the past decade, have focused on making sure that the maximum amount of relief goes back to families and small businesses.
What do you think of Republicans and Democrats' proposals for state spending? What are your fiscal priorities? 800-642-1234 to join in. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, and she co-hosts the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me.
So the Assembly and Senate approved the state budget last week. That puts it on Governor Evers' desk. What are the governor's options?
So the just a quick procedural note here, Kate, just for folks that might be really nerdy and interested in the procedural elements here. Basically, what happens is the legislature has to go through some kind of official paperwork steps before the budget actually gets to the governor. Mm-hmm. So the governor right now is still waiting to get that official budget document, and he can't do anything with it until it's officially on his desk. So just a fun little bit of news there for you.
And once it arrives, he has the 6 days minus Sundays, right?
Right. And in that time, he can sign it entirely. He can partially veto it, so he can make kind of individual changes throughout the document. That's what he did last time, about 78 changes. Or he could veto the entire thing, and that would be very unusual for a governor to do.
So what about the veto pen powers? I think 2 years ago, he was able to creatively use his partial veto powers to add an additional $65 million to the budget for schools.
That's right. And in a large number of other changes, too. The veto powers of the governor in Wisconsin are actually really interesting. They're among the most expansive in the country. He can do things like delete words, he can delete numbers, he can delete punctuation to kind of craft new language in the budget. Now, since I think it was the 1980s that this started, there's been sort of a clawback of different veto powers since then for the Wisconsin governor. So as of right now, he can't do things like create new words by eliminating letters. So take letters out of a word to make a new word. Can't take words out of a sentence to make new sentences. Can't do a veto that would effectively veto current law that was in existence before the budget. And what he creates with all of these changes, the new language has to be germane to what that language was about before. So he can't veto language about schools and suddenly make it about transportation, for example.
Well, this is where English majors get kind of excited. suddenly English majors have more power than they ever recognized.
It's a little bit of a challenge and a puzzle in a way, I suppose.
So what happens if the governor does veto the entire budget?
So as I mentioned before, that would be really unlikely. The reason that we're talking about it this year is the governor said that he hadn't ruled it out just because of the number of changes and the size of the changes that Republicans made to his proposal. So what would happen, though, if he did do that, was it essentially kind of reboots the process. It starts over from the beginning as far as budget negotiations go. But it's not like the state wouldn't have any money, wouldn't be funding any programs. The current state budget, the one that we're under right now, would just continue until a new budget goes into effect.
So 7 Democrats total from both chambers voted in favor of the Republican-made budget. Does that diminish the likelihood of a full veto?
I think that's definitely part of the conversation that folks are having right now about, you know, will he, won't he, what's the veto going to look like? This was a fairly, you know, not a huge number of Democrats, but a notable number of Democrats that joined Republicans to vote for this budget. I think importantly, those Democrats, several of them anyway, said that they did so because they knew the governor had his veto power and they had faith in him to make changes.
And I think that was Democrat Steve Doyle of Unalaska who said just that. I have confidence our governor is going to use his veto pen to turn this into a budget that will be helpful.
Exactly. Yeah. He said that during floor debate. Republicans, or reporters rather, were able to catch two of the Senate Democrats that voted similarly to Steve Doyle. And they said the same thing after floor debate in the Senate. They said, you know, we've got faith in the governor. We think he's going to make those changes and make this a little more palatable to us.
We're talking about the state budget and politics with Laurel White, WPR's state capitol reporter. You can join in on the budget and what is ahead. What do you think of Republican and Democrats' proposals for state spending? Do you think they are far apart? What are your top priorities and how do you see them echoed throughout these budgets? What questions do you have about what is in and isn't in the budget plan? 800-642-1234. So, Laurel, take us back to the Assembly and Senate floor votes on the state budget last week. Can you kind of explain what happened, a little bit of that back and forth?
So it was pretty expected, Kate. I mean, other than those seven Democrats, it was party line votes in the Senate and the Assembly. There were a lot of familiar debates. By the time we get to this point in the budget, floor debate on the budget, we know all the proposals that are in there. They've been debated in the Joint Finance Committee between Republicans and Democrats. They've been talked about in the press. Various interest groups have been able to weigh in. So there weren't really new arguments. I think it was kind of a rehashing of the things that Republicans said that they're really proud of and Democrats said that they're really concerned about. Democrats attempted to introduce a whole slew of amendments to the budget that would have put things like the Medicaid expansion, for example, back into the budget and, you know, argued why they think that's a good idea, kind of sharing some of the points that we're pretty familiar with at this point. None of those amendments were successful. So it was really just it was the broad strokes of Republicans saying this is a responsible budget. This is a good budget. And Democrats saying this is a missed opportunity to invest more in things like schools and healthcare in particular.
Yeah, I wonder what you think are the repercussions there for Democrats, because expanding Medicaid was the top priority. It would, you know, give 90,000 people access to healthcare and, you know, bringing in $1.6 billion in funding to the state. Is this something that Republicans will look back at and you know, maybe shake their heads at or not?
Well, the Medicaid debate has been going on for several years now, and Republicans really haven't changed their tune on it, obviously haven't changed their tune on it. Democrats have pushed and pushed and pushed. I think that there was a report from the Legislative Research Office or the Nonpartisan Budget Office that said they'd introduced amendments about Medicaid more than a dozen times, at least over the past several years, trying to get on floor debate on the Medicaid expansion. And we're just not seeing a political shift there. I don't think that that's going to happen anytime soon. You know, Democrats say this is popular with people, according to polls, but Republicans say they just don't think it's a good idea for the state financially, could saddle the state with more bills in the future. So I can't see that being a different debate than the one we've seen in the past for them.
Yeah. Another item that not in the Republican plan was full legalization of marijuana for medicinal and recreational purposes, which would have been another revenue generator for the state. What was debate like there?
Another issue where Democrats point to polling and say this is something that people want, and Republicans push back and say this is not something our constituents want. We've talked to our districts and we know that folks are concerned about what the social effects of marijuana legalization in Wisconsin would be. They're concerned about even medical marijuana. I mean, some states, several states have taken the step, of course, of legalizing medical marijuana first before recreational marijuana. And we haven't accomplished that in Wisconsin. We haven't taken that step in Wisconsin. So we know that more Republicans, like Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, for example, are more open to medical marijuana, but there just isn't broad enough support in the two Republican caucuses that are in charge of both chambers to get that done.
The centerpiece of the Republican budget is the tax cut, the $3.4 billion tax cut over 2 years, funded with that unexpected influx of state revenue projections. What did Republicans and Democrats say there on the tax cut?
Another kind of classic debate between Republicans and Democrats. Republicans said this is money from taxpayers, a larger than expected revenues coming into the state that's coming from taxpayers, and we want to return that money to folks. They can spend it better than we can spend it. And that's, you know, in their view, an appropriate way to go about doing this. Democrats said this is a real wasted opportunity. This is kind of a once in a lifetime amount of money. I mean, this is a huge and unexpected revenue estimate coming in, $4.4 billion more than expected over the next 3 years. And they said, you know, if we're not going to spend money on things like schools or healthcare or roads when we get a revenue estimate like this, we're never going to do it. And so that was kind of the back and forth on debate for the tax cut.
WPR's State Capitol reporter Laurel White is with us on the budget. With its passage in the state Senate last week, it means Evers can choose to sign it or use his partial veto powers once it makes its way to his desk. What questions do you have about what is and isn't in the budget plan? What questions do you have about the governor's budget veto powers or the budgeting process? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Laurel White on the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The two-year spending plan has changed immensely since Governor Evers crafted his budget and unveiled a $91 billion bounce-back plan in February, as he called it. At an event Thursday on the Oneida Reservation, Evers wouldn't say what changes to the budget he might make.
So much of the decision-making that I do have is going to be relied upon the actual language of the bills, which we have not seen.
The governor has 6 days to take action on the budget when it reaches his desk. What are your top priorities? Are they in this budget? How do you feel about the Senate's plan that includes one-tenth of the state funding for schools that Evers had budgeted? 800-642-1234. WPR's State Capitol reporter Laurel White stays with us. Laurel, let's look at education, the biggest, you know, chunk of the budget. Republicans had budgeted $1.34 billion less than Evers for schools over the 2 years, told schools they can use federal COVID relief funding to fill the gap. Where did K-12 end up in this budget?
Oof. So this is a complicated one, Kate. We'll take a deep breath before diving
we'll
in.
We'll buckle up. Yes.
Yes. So what's going on here is that Republicans did, as you said, approved a much smaller amount of money for K-12 education than the governor asked for. In the first Joint Finance Committee meeting, they approved just $128 million for an increase for K-12 education. Now, the governor had asked for $1.6 billion for an increase. So obviously, very small increase there. The governor wasn't pleased. And then actually the federal government pushed back and said, sent a letter to Wisconsin and said, we're concerned that you're not going to meet requirements for federal coronavirus aid for education, because one of the requirements is to maintain a steady funding level for K-12 education. The federal government essentially doesn't want states to cut money because it's sending them money, which is what Republicans have cited, saying, we're getting so much federal money for schools, we don't need to put as much state money in. So in response to that federal pushback, Republicans put more money into K-12 at the kind of final stage of the Joint Finance Committee. They added about $650 million more dollars, which hits that threshold that meets the federal requirements. But interestingly, it's not actually new money that schools can use. It's not an increase. It's just filling a gap that's created by another part of the Republican budget, which is a property tax cut. So it's just new state money that fills a place, fills a hole made by a property tax cut. Those property taxes, of course, would have gone to schools.
Yeah, and Eavor is very much focused on education, education being his background. What might he do there? Because these two spending plans are so greatly different.
They are hugely different. I mean, I think this is the best example of how different the Republican budget and Eavor's budget really are, you know, from start to finish. Eavor's has some options. You know, he has the partial veto authority. As we mentioned earlier, you know, he used that partial veto to increase spending by about $65 million for K-12 in the last budget. So he could do something like that. And that's really, for the most part, at least in terms of the state budget, his only recourse at this point is to use his partial veto to increase school spending. I think the other interesting thing to note is that Eavor's does have sole authority over how all of that federal money is spent, all of the federal coronavirus aid that comes into the state. So he can choose how that's allocated and send, you know, more perhaps than was initially planned to schools if he wants.
Let's bring in a call now. Chris is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Chris. What are your thoughts on the budget?
Well, you know, the way I see it, the Republicans have got to keep that education budget low, because otherwise you educate people and they start getting uppity, and then they want things like living wages and health care, and any education that you have should just be on math and science, and you stay away from things like history and civics. And that's how the Republicans are going to stay in charge. Thank you for letting me talk.
So Chris is really saying there, Laurel, that, you know, keeping the education budget small has that ripple effect into other areas.
You know, the governor has made, and Democrats have made, the argument that education is really kind of the foundational part of the budget. You know, you make investments in kids, you're making investments in the future, you make investment in schools, and that's going to contribute to more vibrant communities and make Wisconsin as a whole more appealing. I know your last guest talked about getting more people to move to Wisconsin, to be workers in Wisconsin. And the governor and Democrats have argued better schools make Wisconsin more appealing.
You can join in 800-642-1234 as we talk with Laurel White, WPR State Capitol reporter, taking a look at the spending plan that will be on Governor Eavor's desk. And what questions do you have about the governor's budget veto powers or the budgeting process? A look back, 800-642-1234. Laurel, are there examples of where Republicans and Democrats found agreement in this budget?
So there were a few. I think one that we've been talking about since the very beginning of this budget process was broadband internet expansion in Wisconsin, the real digital divide between particularly rural and urban communities in Wisconsin, and their access to good quality, high speed internet was absolutely thrown into harsh relief during the pandemic. There were kids struggling to connect to the internet for school. Businesses in rural communities were having a harder time reaching customers during the pandemic when they shut down. So it was really a bipartisan agreement that something needed to be done for broadband internet in the state budget. Ultimately, they approved about $125 million for broadband internet expansion, an increase of that amount. For broadband internet expansion. So that was certainly something that we had our eye on and a place that they agreed.
And, you know, Eavor's declared this year the year of broadband in a state of the state address. He had followed up with a plan to put $200 million in the budget for broadband expansion. And then there was also the federal aid. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. So you say, you know, the governor proposed $200 million. Ultimately, they approved $125 million. So again, it's an area of agreement, but not perfect alignment. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a place where there was perfect alignment, but there was definitely the agreement that there needed to be investment there, and that was going to be a priority. They also agreed on things like school mental health, investments in that. And interestingly, the state stewardship program, where the state buys public lands, the Knowles-Nelson stewardship program, agreed to extend that for the next few years and fund that. And that's something that Democrats have been really pushing and some Republicans have been skeptical of. So that was a pretty, you know, marked area of agreement for them.
Well, let's look at the wider politics of this budget. Governor Evers is planning to run for re-election next year. Does this state budget help fulfill promises he made to voters in the last election?
Well, you know, kind of going back in the time machine, Kate, I think the mantra for Evers in the last election was schools, healthcare, roads. I think that phrase kind of plays over in my dreams. We heard it so much, schools, healthcare, roads. So we think about what he was able to accomplish in this budget. We've talked a lot about he hasn't gotten the money that he wanted for K-12 schools or higher education, for that matter. His proposal for the UW system was much larger than what Republicans approved. In terms of healthcare, obviously the Medicaid expansion is huge there. He wasn't able to get that in the Republican budget. Roads, there are some investments in road funding in this budget, particularly the 94 expansion around Milwaukee. That's a big thing that's been pushed for a while, funded in this budget.
Albeit public transit pulled back, eliminating funding there.
Exactly. So that kind of plays the pullback for transit funding actually kind of leads into what I was going to say next, which is, you know, the governor isn't getting what he asked for in terms of the state budget for these things, but he does have that federal money. And Republicans pointed to the federal money and said, well, a lot of that's going to public transportation. A lot of that's going to schools. A lot of that's going to support public health and communities. So we don't need to be investing in that. So the governor didn't get the investments he wanted in those things in the state budget. But he has, as I mentioned before, unilateral control over how that federal money is spent. So he can really identify, pinpoint, kind of personally pick the programs that he wants in each of those areas to get money. And I think he'll focus on that in his reelection bid for sure.
Laurel, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter and co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Just ahead, another edition of Mondays with Mike. We have WPR's director, Mike Crane, sharing updates and taking your questions. You're listening to the Ideas Network.